Georgia Virtue presents the Let Me Tell You Why You're Wrong podcast.
This is Dave Roberts, host of Let Me Tell You Why You're Wrong. And I am continuing our special interviews with the candidates for Sheriff of Paulding County. I'm with Chad Hunton. Chad, how you doing, brother?
I'm well, my friend.
Chad, you are the chief deputy.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
So you have kind of the responsibility of the jail, road deputies, and every other aspect just south of it going to our sheriff.
Yes, sir. All the day-to-day operations, all the division commanders, they report to me.
What got you into law enforcement?
It's, I guess, kind of silly to some, but when I was young, growing up in a law enforcement family, listening to all the stories around the dinner table and, family events, I always heard all the wild things of, being a police officer, being a sheriff's deputy. And I've always felt this calling in my life to serve. And I knew at a young age that I wanted to be a deputy sheriff in Paulding County where I grew up. I wanted to protect the community that I grew up in.
Well, it's the family business.
So to speak, yeah. It's instead of blue bloods, it's the hunting bloods, My father and my uncle, my cousin, my little sister were all in law enforcement. My father and uncle are retired now. My grandfather, I call him my grandfather. He's actually my step-grandfather, but they've always treated me like blood. But he's retired from law enforcement as well as his father-in-law. And we have a history of serving our country as well in the military. So,
And you were a devil dog.
Yes, I was in the Marine Corps. I was in the reserves on a 6x2 contract.
Yeah, fun. And you say reserves. I served in all three components of the Army: active, reserve, and guard.
Yes.
And the hardest thing about the reserves, not so much the guard. Guard was something else. But I was in a special operations reserve unit. And people kind of roll their eyes at reserves. Like, no, you have to maintain all your standards mm-hmm. two days a month.
Oh, yeah. And you've got to meet the same standards as in the Marine Corps as the Fleet Marines do. And, we sign a blank check just like everybody else does.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've got a friend that I knew from the reserve side that has a Purple Heart now.
Yes.
He got messed up a little bit in Iraq. And I got another friend who got really messed up in Iraq. Had a Humvee flip on his head. He was in the turret, and the Humvee went over and threw him out and broke a couple vertebrae.
Bless him.
Yeah, I mean, because I see it online all the time. It's like, well, he was in the reserve. I'm like, so what?
Yes. Well, I just want to be honest.
Well, no, and that's fine. But there really is very little difference between once you put the uniform on, And you walk on post, that's it. I mean, you carry an ID card and your wallet. Now the benefits of the commissary and PX really aren't there. I mean, you can use them.
Yeah.
The only thing I use in the reserve components before they had alcohol sales on Sunday in Georgia, you could go on post the class 6 and get a 12 pack of beer on Sunday. So I was the most popular guy in my neighborhood when I was in the reserve. So, we've had the same sheriff for quite a while, and he's beloved.
Yes.
And he's obviously been a good mentor.
Yes.
And former canine officer. He worked mm-hmm. his way up just like you did, and honestly, just like your opponent did. But what vision do you have? Is every leader is different. It's not better. It's not worse. It's different.
Yes.
So, even when I was in... In corporate life, when I took over a branch at one point, or I took another leadership position, it's different. It's just mm-hmm. it's not necessarily better or worse. So, what kind of changes do you see coming down the pipe with a Sheriff Hunton?
Well, for me, my philosophy as a leader has always been that if you'll concentrate on the needs and desires of others, your needs will be met. And I believe that's why I've been so successful in our organization, is I always concentrate on our people when I was in the different positions that I was in. And I still do that today. It's harder as you go up the chain of command because there's so many people at the sheriff's office now, staff-wise. But I try to concentrate on our command staff, and I try to teach them what I have learned over the years as being a division commander, being the SWAT commander, honor guard commander, all the different roles that I've held at the sheriff's office. I've learned from each and every one of them. And I've learned from the sheriff, working beside him for almost 7 years, side by side, and being part of his administration for almost 10 years now. I've learned so much from him. And those things that I have learned, some good, some bad, have shaped me into who I am. And so my vision, part of it, is to continue from the base that Sheriff Gulledge has built for us and to continue to build upon that. And when I say that, I've got some key areas for us to focus on in the beginning, and I believe it's going to help us as we continue to move forward down the road. One is policy and oversight, and we're already working on that. We're currently going through a complete policy and procedure revision at this time, and we got multiple teams working on this. It's going to be almost a year-long project, and we're almost halfway through it. But I think this is going to make it better for our staff. It's going to be a lot more clear. It's going to be updated. And it's going to set the procedures in place for our supervisors so we have that accountability. As sheriff, I expect the citizens of this county to hold me accountable, and I'll have to hold our staff accountable. And I have that experience. And that's one of the hardest things in any leadership or management position, is holding people accountable, because sometimes you have to let people go. You love them like a brother or sister, but you got to make that separation, and it's not easy. But we got to have that. And with this, with the new policy and procedure, it's going to be a lot easier for the staff to access and all those good things. So to me, that's just continuing on from where Sheriff Gulledge started us at. The other part of that is the wellness and safety of our staff. And one of the things that we started in 2014 was a peer support program. Myself and the chaplain, we've been teaching emotional survival to our staff for, I want to say, since 2015. But we've been doing it for years. And to me, that's a very important component with the sheriff's office, because we don't need our deputies just to be, and our jailers just to be, physically able. They need to be mentally stable. They need to be in a good place, in a headspace. And the things that we see and deal with on a daily basis, it gets to you. And, you know, a box can only hold so much before it starts to spew out. And I've seen a lot of careers that were, ended because they couldn't deal with it. So I want to expand our mental health services to our staff along with their families. And because I believe that if we have staff that are mentally healthy just as well as physically healthy, they're going to provide the better services for the community.
Well, it's also home stress. Guys going through a divorce is having that support, is getting them to talk to somebody. And look, the only thing I can compare it to is military. You know, when I went in the Army in 1995, it was frowned upon to go and get help.
Oh, yes. It's the same way in law enforcement, and we're trying to break that stigma.
Yeah, and the states with red flag laws. You know, I'm a gun guy.
Yes.
People are petrified in these places with red flag laws, that if I go and if I go and I'm honest with my therapist, they're going to show up and take my damn guns.
I got you.
And that's a very big concern throughout the veteran community. And usually we handle it with humor. There's a meme out there that say, need to tell the psychologist enough to get help, but not so much that it locks me up.
Oh, Lord.
But all the symptoms of mental health, a lot of times with people having an episode, the first contact they're having is going to be law enforcement.
Yes.
And it's not somebody that necessarily needs to be locked up, but maybe locked away for a while. Unfortunately, one flew over the cuckoo's nest killed inpatient mental health care in our country. The book was and movie were an extreme example with Nurse Ratched and all that stuff. And that really kind of got the ball rolling with, we started to close these state facilities. Now we don't have anywhere to put them. Is there any sort of training that you plan to put your deputies through to be able to understand what's going on and avoid adding trauma to somebody who's already having an episode?
Yes, so we've already started that process. It's called crisis intervention training, and we actually we have an incentive for our staff, and we have a senior jailer incentive, and we have a senior deputy incentive. So, and within both of those, they have to take the CIT class, and there's some other things they have to take as well. But once they complete that process and they turn in their certificates, they actually get a 5% pay incentive at this time. So, to me, it's twofold. One, the staff member, whether it's a jailer or deputy, is educated, and two, we're rewarding them for it. But also, the third phase of that is being able to handle these situations within the community and realizing when somebody is in a mental state of crisis versus, you know, behavioral, so to speak. We work pretty good with mobile crisis. We have had our issues with DBHDD, we've been able to work around these things. I've got a couple of deputies that have really stepped up their game and have made good contacts out, the ones that are on patrol. And they've actually been very creative and helped us come up with some different ways to try to help in these situations. For long wait periods for a crisis counselor to come on scene to do an evaluation, things of that nature. The other thing is, when the mental health facilities closed in 2012 in the state of Georgia, the jails immediately overnight turned into mental health facilities. And that's been an ongoing issue. And in 2014, we were very fortunate enough, we brought mental health into our facility to help us, but also to help defendants that were there and to help get them stabilized, try to get them, you know, where they of sober mind, so to speak, so they can make good, healthy choices and then provide them with resources. And we've continued to expand upon that. Now we have a caseworker on staff as well that helps them with resources outside the facility and try to keep them on track with if they need medication, if they need, you know, visits, things of that nature.
Now, Judge Dave Lyles runs a mental health court in Paulding County.
Yes.
Have you seen positive results where you may get somebody in needs help and they get handed over to that program and maybe you don't see them again?
So our mental health accountability courts includes drug court, parental court. There's multiples out there. But yes, there was a lot of stigma about the accountability courts years ago when they first started becoming real popular. And a lot of people, sheriffs in particular, were not fans of them. And the one thing that I can say for sure with our judges is when it says accountability court, they are held accountable. And I have seen some great success stories come from this. And I'm very proud of our judicial system here in Paulding with the accountability courts. They've been successful, and it has helped with the keeping defendants from returning, getting them stabilized, and being productive members of our community. So we're very fortunate to have those programs as well.
And the drug court is run by Judge Dean Bucci, and he does a great job of holding these folks accountable. And I support making people who are charged accessible as far as internet, because we don't want the government throwing people in prison without them. I just hate when they're going through accountability court, they're going to mess up. I don't know if anybody's gotten has graduated drug court without being locked up at least one day for screwing up.
No, that's why it's called accountability court. Yeah, they hold them accountable through the whole process.
And as sophomoric as it sounds, it's a spanking. It's why you discipline your kids. It's a spanking. Yes. You're not throwing away the key.
Yes.
But yeah, they show up at your house at 2 o'clock in the morning. You got to open the door.
Yes, sir.
And if you smell like booze,
yes,
you know, guess where we're going.
Yes.
So yeah, the academy courts are great, and it's one thing that the county's doing. I hate that so much of the mental health stuff is dumped on road deputies.
Yes.
And but they're the first ones out there.
They are, and unfortunately, you know, mental health, along with many other issues, it's a community issue as well. You know, for years we've been putting, I guess I'm trying to think of the right term, but pointing the finger at the state, so to speak. But it's also a community issue. My meetings with Commissioner Tanner and the others that preceded him with DBHDD, I believe they have good intentions, but these issues have fallen on to the counties and the communities. You know, they've got programs right now where they have sheriffs that are housing people that have been found incompetent. And I've got issues with that. I don't think it's right. I think it's on the verge of being unconstitutional. That's my personal opinion. I have no intentions of doing that. Our staff are not medical staff. They are jailers. We're not, you know, mental health professionals. We're not medical professionals. Even though we have those folks on our staff, the jailers are the one that have to deal with them 24/7.
Right. Now, this is kind of the same thing. This is a question off of Facebook, as I said. I put it out that I was doing this. Can you describe your vision for Sheriff's Department's role in collaborating with the Department of Juvenile Justice and local outreach programs such as Teen Intervene? How do you plan to enhance these partnerships to support at-risk youth in Paulding?
So one of the biggest things for me is we need to be partnering with all of our different community organizations, whether it's combating family violence, you know, drug addiction, mental health, all these things, and the juveniles programs as well. One of the things that we have that we've been very successful with is our DARE program. I look forward to keeping that program going. And we partnered with Drug Free Paulding, and they actually have a youth side of that. And one of the ideas that I have is, instead of, you know, people like myself that's in administration stuff being involved with these organizations, get the deputies involved. Let the deputies be a part of these organizations and build those relationships within the community. And then to me, that's going to lead to other things, because we have a lot of deputies that are involved in the community, whether they're coaching ball, umpiring ball games, you know, and when I say ball, I mean all, you know, football, baseball, softball, soccer, all these different things that our deputies do on their own time. And the other big thing that we have, and I think is very important, is our school resource deputies. They build relationships with these kids in the schools. And, you know, I've been with our resource deputies and, you know, teenagers and young adults coming up to them like, man, I remember you from school. And, you know, the relationship that they built with them. And so that part of it, I think, is very important as well. If there's other organizations out there that want to partner with us and you know, have deputies involved, you know, I want to get the deputies involved in these different organizations. So I think that's going to be a key thing as well. But the other thing I want to point out too is we have our safety cadet program, which was formerly known as an Explorer program. And the at one time, we had over 40 students that participated in that program. And we've had some issues over the, you know, we dealt with COVID. We've had to deal with all the media issues concerning peace officers across the United States. And so we haven't had as much participation in that, but we have a lot of different things that we do, you know, with the youth. It's around the youth, And if there's other organizations out there that would like to partner with us, I would love to be able to find staff that would want to participate and join in with them.
Well, as we're running along, I do want to address a couple things that I did with Ashley.
Yes, sir.
One, you can't talk about the Heather Turner case.
No, sir.
That's the number one question that comes up.
Yes, sir.
And the best example I have for that is the murders of those beautiful kids in Idaho. The father, one of the fathers, was on the news wearing this department out, just wearing them out. They're not doing anything. I'm not getting it. Then a day later, we find out that he's arrested in West Virginia, wherever he was. Where they were working the case.
Yes, sir.
Is they can't say anything. And something that you guys both talked about at the round table is you get one bite of the apple.
Yes, sir.
If you charge somebody on rumor, innuendo, or I know he did it, and he gets acquitted, that's it. There is no justice.
Yes, sir.
And the other was McMaster's. I know there is still ongoing litigation with that?
There is, unfortunately. There is still litigation that's pending in that case as well.
So that ties your hands.
Yes. I did, and I've said this multiple times, that if the people see fit to elect me sheriff, that as soon as the litigation is over with, there's going to be a full disclosure internally and externally of everything that took place in that case.
Yeah, and I would hope you wouldn't discuss ongoing litigation. It's one of the few reasons that our local government can go into executive session is to talk about litigation, because it can't be public until it is.
Yes, sir.
But Chad, I really appreciate your time as we're running long. You know, being a Southerner, I'll sit around and talk to you all dadgum day. I want to give a big thanks to Matt Mason with Farmers Insurance. Matt allows us to use his space for in-person interviews. It's the space we're using, actually, Doug actually rents from him, Doug Shaw. He is a business broker and real estate agent. Super good guy. If you're looking to buy a business or sell a business, he knows a lot of people. So, Chad, where can people find you online, where people can contribute to the campaign as we're starting early voting when this show drops?
Yes, sir. So my website is chadhunton.com. There's all my background information is on there and my years of experience. There's a t-shirt request on there, sign request, and also a donation tab. There's also information on there concerning early voting and voting in general. If you have questions about your polling locations or anything of that nature, we got a link on there for you as well.
Outstanding. Chad, again, thank you very much, and good luck. Hopefully this thing doesn't stress you. Leaves a few hairs left on y'all's head by the time we get to May 21st.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. Catch me howling at the moon.